Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Jo Ferguson. I am a military veteran and a retired general practitioner. And I'm here this afternoon to chair a veteran-friendly question and answer session, which I hope will provide you with useful information about the benefits of becoming a veteran-friendly accredited practice. With me today, I've got Dr. Jonathan Leach, Dr. Emily Brooks, and Mr. Peter Jones. Could I ask each of you to introduce yourselves, starting with you, please, Jonathan?
Yeah, thanks very much, Jo. So I'm Dr. Jonathan Leach. I'm a GP at Dovenham House Surgery in Bromsgrove. So it's a busy practice, like many of them. I served for 25 years, and the last 14 years I've been back in the NHS. And our practice is a veteran accredited practice. Thank you.
That's great, Jonathan. Thank you very much indeed. Peter, could we go to you next, please?
Yeah, hi Jo. I'm Peter Jones. I'm a veteran of 13 years with the Royal Air Force and currently now working as a civil servant.
Great to have you here, Peter, giving us the patient voice in all of this. And lastly, Dr. Emily Brooks.
Thanks, Jo. Yeah, so I'm a veteran of the Army and the RAF as well. I was a medical officer for 17 years and I'm currently working as the Royal College of GP Clinical Veteran Champion, promoting veterans' healthcare and wellbeing.
Wonderful. It's great to have all three of you here representing different takes on this important programme today. And Jonathan, I'm going to come back to you for the first question. And that's, can you just explain to us why becoming a veteran-friendly practice is so important?
Yeah, thanks very much, Jo. So I think it's recognised that many veterans are vulnerable, and they're a vulnerable group of patients which actually require sometimes additional or special understanding. Now, whilst the vast majority of veterans are absolutely fine, and in fact, some of the misnomers are that many of the veterans have significant problems, which they don't have. Within that, there are a significant number who do have medical problems as a consequence of their military service. So it's an important part that we recognise that as the NHS and actually also within general practice. There's also what patients say is that they really appreciate this, and Peter will perhaps expand on that later. But having an understanding of this is really important because there are different and sometimes much quicker referral pathways for patients which people can know about. Also, there are, because of the vulnerability, they often are provided with additional support, particularly welfare support and social prescribing. And then finally, our experience is that because we know to refer somewhere to the right place first time, actually we found that it may reduce practice workload. And considering where we all are as GPs at the moment, if we can do that rather than bouncing around the various either mental health or physical pathways, going to the right place first time can be really helpful.
So it's very clear from that, Jonathan, that there are benefits to both the patient and the practice. And Emily, I wonder if you might like to pick up on what the benefits to the practices are of this programme.
Yeah, so as Jonathan's already mentioned, knowing the specialist pathways for veterans can reduce the workload for a GP practice because they can get the patient referred to the right place at the right time and reduce the number of GP consultations leading up to them getting the sort of secondary care input that they need. I think there's also a benefit for the practice as well in terms of the learning that's done to understand veterans' healthcare needs more, for example, learning around symptoms of PTSD, which may actually also benefit other patients too in the practice, not just veterans. And the programme also helps to address a particularly vulnerable group, and that's recognised by CQC as well. So that's beneficial for the practice as well in their CQC inspections as a way of demonstrating that they're meeting the needs of a vulnerable group of patients.
That's great, thank you. So there's quite a wide-ranging benefit for the practice. Coming to you, Peter, you know, you're the patient, you're at the centre of all this. You're registered with a veteran-friendly practice. What benefits have you noticed?
I think initially it's the ability to communicate and for somebody to understand who has that experience. I've been to surgeries who haven't had much experience or knowledge with veterans, and it is very difficult and quite daunting, especially when you leave service, to actually articulate issues that you may be going through, physical or mental. I found from my experience that, you know, like Dr. Leach said, it's very straightforward and very quick to know exactly which route you're going down, and to get the interventions at the right time. It fills you with more confidence in that process, because you know, waiting lists, etc. But having somebody, you know, who's available, who understands the context of potentially some of the more complex issues, it definitely gave me more confidence in being able to speak and articulate what was concerning.
So it sounds like it's made a real difference to your relationship with your healthcare providers, which is wonderful. Going back to you, Jonathan, one of the requirements for practices which want to become accredited as veteran friendly is to appoint a clinical lead. Could you explain to us what the clinical lead actually needs to do?
Yeah, so we expect that practices would have a clinical person. It doesn't need to be a doctor. Some have used a practice nurse, sometimes a pharmacist, it might be a paramedic, who has an interest in this area, many of whom have a link, either personally or family, with the armed forces, so a personal sort of interest. And essentially what we ask is that person understands a bit more. There is some education, particularly through the Royal College of GPs, which I think Emily will cover a little bit later. And essentially they act as a resource within the surgery. So it's analogous. For example, I'm also a practice safeguarding lead. So, for example, colleagues come to me to discuss any concerns they have about safeguarding, and we discuss those and decide what to do. And exactly the same way my colleagues bring to me any concerns about, you know, any military patients that we may have. The additional things that we ask are that when people register, and actually this is now part of the registration form, that people are asked whether or not they've ever served. And then secondly, that it is coded within the GP computer system. And we recommend that the term military veteran be used. There are a number of codes there, but keeping it really simple, we would recommend. But it's not a complicated process, but we do think actually having the clinical lead is important. It's that sort of slightly more knowledgeable resource about this, and particularly about referral pathways, who will be available both individually and also for the practice.
So we're talking about a focus for a defined group of patients in very much the way as we would with other areas. You touched on the training. Emily, could you perhaps fill us in a bit more on what the training actually involves?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So all the training, it's online training. There's a couple of different modules, and in total, it probably takes sort of just over sort of 2 hours to complete. So it's not an onerous task at all. And, you know, as I sort of spoke about before, practices then come away with knowing what those referral pathways are that are really going to help them to help their patients. So and of course, it can also be recorded for CPD as well, for your annual appraisal.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. And for practices who want to go ahead with this, how do they actually apply for accreditation?
So accreditation is a really simple, straightforward process, actually. So via the Royal College website, there's a link there and a form to complete, and with some information naming who the clinical lead is. And then that's sent into the Royal College, and then the practice then receives a package, a welcome package, really, with its CPD and other information about being a veteran-friendly practice.
That all sounds incredibly straightforward. Jonathan, if I could come back to you, with this awareness, does it actually make a difference to the speed at which veterans might be seen following a referral?
Yeah, so wearing my NHS England hat as the Associate Medical Director for Military and Veterans Health, we've set up, for example, OpCourage. OpCourage is the specific mental health service for military veterans. Now, health services nationally are under significant pressure, but this is one which is specific. And so, for example, the providers, and this is right across England, and all the details are on nhs.uk website, is that the key performance indicator for assessment is 10 working days, and that's a routine case, and 5 working days if it is an urgent case. I was looking most recently that the average is about 14 days. So they're seen quicker, but also what happens is that you're seen by somebody who understands the military. So as Peter said, having that understanding connection, not necessarily people who have served, but people who have worked around the military community for many years. So really important. And then on the physical side, there's the Veterans Trauma Network. Again, this is often used for more complicated patients, frequently for a second opinion. And again, that those details are on the nhs.uk website. And again, you're getting a more specific, often a what I would describe as a teaching hospital type of approach, but by people who understand the military and understand the differences of the culture and language and some of the differences in the conditions which military veterans may sometimes bring. So that's why I said it's important, because you go to the right place first time. So it's as well as just the speed.
That's exactly what I've just written down, actually. We're getting the right patient to the right place first time round. Out of interest, how many practices are actually accredited at the moment?
So I was looking at that just yesterday. It's 1,897, so we're just short of 1,900. We'd certainly like significantly more. So if we put that in context, it's about 30% of practices in England, about 34% of the population. So we'd like that to be bigger. We know that, for example, there are many practices down in the southwest, London, which have an interest in this but are not accredited. But overall, we would like to see, you know, more practices come forward, you know, in terms of actually being able to see whether or not they could assist their patients. But actually, as I said, potentially assist themselves at a time when we're already so busy.
And clearly the other people who are involved in this, apart from the patient and the practice, are actually the patient's families as well, but they don't occur in isolation. How does this actually impact on armed forces families that are registered with the practice?
So there's a direct and an indirect. We sometimes find actually that the families of those who are military veterans registered, because again, they sometimes want to understand. But also, if, for example, I've been referring somebody to Op Courage, maybe with mental health difficulties, Op Courage does, as an example, provide additional support to family members. So if for, you know, and frequently if they've got significant mental health difficulties, it's actually the family member, the spouse, the partner, who's there at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, trying to keep them safe. What Op Courage can do is actually support the family. And I think that going to the right place is both a direct benefit to the individual patient, but it's also an indirect benefit to the family. And obviously that can come back into the GP surgery in terms of obviously the, you know, what support we may need to provide to the family. So, you know, all of that's really important. And that's been deliberate as part of the setup for Op Courage, that where it is a benefit to the veteran, the families are also supported.
So there's really wide ranging benefits to practices from becoming accredited as veteran friendly. How can the regional leads that have been appointed help practices achieve accreditation?
So what we're doing at the moment is that we're trying to encourage more practices to come forward. We've described it, and it, you know, it certainly, as Peter said, it's beneficial to the patients, and certainly from a practice perspective, we found it beneficial. And the regional leads are there to assist in terms of providing guidance and understanding, so that if there are questions about, you know, what this involves, or, you know, how much work would be involved, they can be there as a resource for practices should they have any queries.
Jonathan, that's great. Thank you very much indeed. Emily, I'd like to come back to you. What happens if I want to speak to a clinician about all of this? How do I go about identifying somebody who can help me more from the clinical perspective?
Myself, I'm very happy to be contacted and to answer any questions about the programme. I also work alongside Robin Simpson, Dr. Robin Simpson, who's the other Veterans Clinical Champion at the Royal College. And of course, Jonathan as well, I'm sure would be very happy to be contacted and answer any questions.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. We've covered an awful lot of ground in a really quite short period of time, and I would like to thank all of you for your time and input today. And now just offer you, Jonathan, an opportunity to summarise the programme and its benefits, just to draw this session to a close.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jo. So we've certainly as a practice found it very helpful as a direct, as we just described, to the military veteran and their family. Actually, also because of understanding more about PTSD and things like this, as Emily said, we've actually found it very beneficial to our other patients. So, for example, we recognise, for example, women and others who've got PTSD and more appropriately refer. So that would be into mainstream services. It's also assisted our other staff, for example, our receptionists and some of the administrative staff, about understanding the needs of the military community better. So overall, we appreciate where general practice is in the country in terms of, you know, under significant pressure in terms of volume and complexity. But within this, certainly this is a group where there are mechanisms where we can actually help the patients, but also potentially help ourselves as practices and as GPs, as we've outlined.
That's great and very clear, Jonathan. And just to finish off with, I said earlier, Peter, you know, as a patient, you are at the centre of all this. And I'd just like to give you the opportunity to give your message to the practices and clinical staff and others who are listening to this.
Thank you. I think it's a great initiative. It really does help from my perspective and speaking to other colleagues who, you know, have had to go to GP surgeries and necessarily haven't had the same experience that I have, and I've obviously been quite vocal to them about the importance of, you know, this initiative. I can see only benefits from it. It's benefited me personally. It's benefited my family personally. Yeah, and I'm quite really thankful that, you know, that I managed to, just out of nowhere, applying to be part of that practice, that they happened to be that anyway. And it was a pleasant sort of surprise, and it felt quite like I felt a bit more at home from being in med centres, like in my service career, to then it felt similar, a very, you know, similar background, and comfortable in that way. So I definitely would recommend it, and, you know, massive benefits from my perspective.
That's wonderful and very clear indeed, Peter. Thank you very much again to all three of you for your time.